Today on The Grave Talks, Talking Dead. From a very young age, Kitty Janis knew that ghosts were real. She saw them, heard them, and communicated with them on a regular basis. The paranormal was a fact of life and not something to question. As she grew older, Kitty grew to understand that her abilities were unique, and her gift was not something to be taken lightly. She realized that many of the voices she heard and could pick up as EVPs were cries for help. Help that she knew she could give. Helping the deceased to cross over or deliver a message to the living. This is the story of Kitty Janis.
Well, it actually kind of started in the house I grew up in. From a very early age, I remember the house actually being, you know, haunted by a ghost. And I have an older sister and I had an older brother. And we would have paranormal, mostly poltergeist activity happening pretty much about 3-4 times a week. We would come home and all the water in the house would be running. Things would get moved. We would hear the footsteps. And I think the unusual part of it, at least, you know, I've come to learn now, I guess it was rather unusual, was my parents were very nonchalant about it. They were also aware of it, but they hardly even acknowledged what was going on. You know, we would come home and all the water in the house would be running, and they'd say, oh, you know, now the water bill's going to go up, you know, that dang ghost. And they were never afraid of it. They never taught us that this was something that was unusual. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of grew up. I actually have, you know, a memory of thinking, I guess everybody has a ghost in their house. You know, when you're 5, 6, 7 years old and you have all this stuff happening, you know, a few times a week, and your parents are okay with it, your siblings are okay with it, and you're like, I guess everybody kind of has a ghost in their house. And I remember thinking I would have friends over, and we would be sitting in this, you know, huge living room that we had, and then we had windows on 3 sides, and all the windows would be shut, and they had long, you know, floor-to-ceiling curtains. And I remember one time, all at one time, all the curtains on all 3 sides went poof into the room, which was not the first time this had happened. And my friend's eyes just freaked out, and they ran out of the house. I'm like, well, what's wrong with them? Is this a ghost?
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, you mean you don't have a ghost in your house? And I'm just thinking, that was kind of odd that, you mean not everybody has one of these in the house? And I'm thinking, oh, that's kind of weird that not everybody has one of these. And I you know, they said, well, you know, usually the next question is, well, did he ever come to a point where he would frighten you? And I only had one occasion, and I guess this was rather the epiphanal moment when I actually started communicating with spirits, because we were just kind of like, oh, okay, somebody else kind of lives here, and he kind of does his thing and wanders around. But I remember one time I'd gotten into bed, and of course I have the usual cats and dogs running around the house, and I got into bed, and I was probably about 8 years old at the time, and I felt like a thump on the corner of the bed, and at first I thought it was, you know, the cat, you know, hopping on the bed, but then the pressure at the corner of the bed felt different, and I sat up, because all of a sudden I was thinking, this isn't normal. And I could actually see the corner of the bed sinking, as if some weight was going on the corner of the bed, like somebody sitting on the corner of the bed. And this was just a few inches from me, and I remember being very uncomfortable about that, and just instinctively, I just said, stop that, don't do that.
Yeah.
And it immediately dissipated, and he never did it again. And I think that was the only time that, you know, this spirit kind of, you know, crossed the borderline. The only other way that I think he kind of freaked us out was, I talk a lot about, you know, particular areas in a location of a building being haunted, and it's usually stairways and hallways, because there's just so much traffic that goes through these areas. And then we had this little hallway in the house that connected my bedroom, a bathroom, I think another bedroom, and then back into the living room. It's probably about 12 feet long. Nobody in the house liked to go through that hallway. You know, my parents didn't, my brother, I certainly hated it. And if we had to use that bathroom, you run into the bathroom, you slam the door. You know, this would be in the, you know, middle of the day. And you just get that kind of creeped out feeling that just something, you're just like staring at the door knowing there's like something on the other side of that door
sure.
that's going to get you. And you just finish your business in the bathroom and you swing open the door. Maybe you run out of the hallway and you just feel like something like right on the back of your neck and all the hair are standing up on the back of your neck and you just run out of the hallway. And it was always like that. The energy in that hallway never changed. It never dissipated. It was always that creepy, don't want to be here. So I guess that was kind of his territory.
Mm-hmm.
And we would often hear like bootsteps on wood through that hallway. And it was carpeted. So we would be sitting in the house hearing the bootsteps going up and down the hallway. So I guess that was kind of his area that we were meant to stay out of. And we acknowledged that, and we respected that. We didn't go in that hallway any more than we needed to. So, but yeah, I kind of just grew up in a house with a ghost, and everybody in the house was okay with it, and I just kind of grew up with that mindset of these are a thing, they're out there, and there's something not to be afraid of. And I grew up with that from a very early age.
Were you ever able to identify who these ghosts were that were in your childhood home?
In the house, no, and because the weird thing was my parents bought the house brand new. It was a little pink stucco house that they bought in 1955, and the house was newly constructed, and before that it was lemon and orange groves. So all I can think of was it was somebody who had maybe worked in the lemon and orange groves and, you know, was just attached to that land, but that whole building tract was all brand new homes.
Sure.
And, yeah, the neighbors, my parents, friends, or whatever, they never talked about having anything in their house, and they just thought we were kind of weird about acknowledging it. So apparently we were the only house in the tract that had one.
Sure.
And so we really found out who he was, but my parents bought that house brand new, and it was haunted from day one.
When you started realizing, you know, not everyone had a ghost in their home, I know you kind of touched on that a little bit, but what did that feel like for you? I mean, was it an easy thing to kind of accept, or did you think people maybe just weren't sharing their stories, or what was going through your mind as that fact was kind of coming to light for you?
Well, I was still relatively young. I was, you know, my preteens when I realized that, you know, not everybody has a ghost in their house, and it ranged from feeling kind of sorry for them, gee, they don't have something special in their house, to wondering, you know, would they want something in their house? Also being curious is, why are we the ones who have something in our house and not everybody else? Because the house was new, and not knowing who he was, we kind of felt he was a male energy, and we just kind of called him like an uncle, this uncle who just kind of lives in the house and moves things around. He was fascinated by things that were green. If you set something down on a table that was green, it would disappear for days and show up in a really unusual spot, like you knew you didn't accidentally set it down.
Mm-hmm.
I have a story where I was a little kid, and we were going to go to, I think, Knott's Berry Farm or something the next day, and I had this little green plastic pirate treasure chest that I had all my spare money in, and I'd set it on the table, and we were going to go to Knott's Berry Farm the next day with all my little cash. I probably had a whole $7 in there. Get up in the morning, it's gone. It is gone. We tore the house apart, it's gone. I'm crying, where's my money? I can't have any money, spent at Knott's Berry Farm. We searched the house for it, and I knew my parents had moved it. They would have said, oh, we set it down here because we were running late, and we could not find it anywhere. 3 days later, we find it on top of the refrigerator. Now, I'm a little kid. I can't even reach the top of the refrigerator. Why on earth would it have been on top of the refrigerator?
Sure.
We would find it on top of door jams. You know, really odd places where things would normally get accidentally set down. But to kind of digress back to your question, I kind of just, you know, the curiosity just kind of sunk in as well. Why do we have one and nobody else? And I just basically just thought we were special at that point, that we were blessed to have this guy who felt comfortable being in the house, and we respected his space, and he kind of respected ours, and I basically just pitied my friends for, geez, you guys don't have one? Too bad for you. We got a ghost in our house. And I was just like, nanner, nanner, nanner. And he stayed there probably a couple decades until I think my brother moved out to go to college. And then it went from like maybe three times a week of us knows him doing things to maybe, you know, twice a week, once a week. And it kind of just slowly, the energy just kind of changed in the house, and it wasn't abrupt. It was just suddenly, gee, we haven't, you know, heard the ghost in a while, or anything, and he just kind of, I guess, went on his way. But he was there at least probably 15 years in that house.
Almost like he had an interest in the kids.
I beg your pardon?
It's almost like he had an interest in the kids, in yourself and your brother being there and wanted to be around at that time.
Yeah, I guess, but I also think, you know, because when children are growing up in the house and, you know, their energy level's huge and you get that hormonal change going on in the house, you'll hear a lot of, say, poltergeist activity occurring in the house. When you do a residential case, the first questions you ask is, who's living in the house and what are their ages? And, you know, dollars to donuts, you're probably going to find, you know, young teenagers, especially girls. If you got teenage girls in a house, that energy just cycles around like crazy, and a lot of times you'll get poltergeist activity. But this was when we were very young, to a very long time. So all through our young years and past into our teenage years did we have this guy present. So I guess it turned out to be unusual, but when you grow up in that environment, it's not unusual because it's just what you're used to.
Yeah, completely normal at that point. Outside of the home, when you were a child and you were experiencing these things at your own residence, outside of the residence, did you ever run into paranormal entities or activity, or was it all restricted to the house that you lived in?
I did. Well, I probably wasn't cognizant of it until I really actively pursued it, so probably not until my 20s, 30s did I start pursuing it a little bit more. I have a friend who lives probably about 50 yards from a very large cemetery, and I noticed that when we would go over to her house on days where a cemetery would be very slow, primarily like I think we were there on a Super Bowl Sunday. Not everybody's going to be at the cemetery on a Super Bowl Sunday. They're at home watching football.
Sure.
And we were there at her house one time, and this is when I actually started seeing spirits in other locations and actually seeing things. And she had been seeing spirits in her house, too. She had talked to me about spirits being in her house. So I was kind of on guard that there might be something going on in her house. And sure enough, I think I counted like 20 ghosts walking around her house during the day. And I figured they must have been come from the nearby cemetery because they were all dressed kind of formally, and I'm assuming it was probably what they were buried in. And I think they just kind of wanted to be in an energy where there was people. And obviously there was nobody at the cemetery because it was Super Bowl Sunday. Whereas if I was at the same friend's house on a day where the cemetery might be busy, like, Christmas Eve or something like that, there'd be nobody in her house. Mm-hmm. She would tell me stories of, this is when she was like a young teenage girl. Once again, her energy and the hormone levels are up. She told me a really funny story one time where she woke up at about 2 in the morning, and there was this ghost sitting on the corner of her bed. And this lady was dressed in like 1940s clothing, and she's smoking a cigarette in one of those long-tipped cigarette holders, looking very irritated. And she takes a puff of this, cigarette, and she says, "They misspelled my name on my headstone, and you need to fix it." And my friend kind of, blanking and rubbing the sleeve out of her eye. She's like 12 years old. She's like, "Who are you?
Yeah.
Why are you here? Go away." And she was a teenager. She would also have all these, spirits tromping through her bedroom and wanting attention. And as she grew out of her teenage years, that energy changed and the ghost kind of dissipated. So it's kind of like your location and the energy level in the house or the location where you are kind of dictates who might be present and who might be visiting. I think they're attracted to that energy.
When you said you were in the home and you were able to count like 20 spirits in there, were you, let me ask you this, and so we can establish this with the audience, are you a sensitive and empathic individual who can sense these things where, let's say, many other people cannot? Or were these clear as day, anyone who walks in the house would also have sensed up to 20 spirits?
I think it becomes easier if the energy of the house is at a certain level. This was at a time frame when my friend was at, that time in her life where the energy and the hormone levels were up, so it was very easy for me to see them.
Sure.
A psychic or a medium has to maintain a certain vibrational level to be able to see spirits easily, and it kind of changes throughout their abilities. There was a period of about 4 or 5 years where I was very easily able to see spirits. I would see him at work. I'd see him in places I go. I'd see him around other people. And over the course of the years, that kind of changed. I could see maybe just colors or get tastes in my mouth. And then darker stuff would start to come in sometimes. And one day I was at work, I think, and this lady in white just appeared before me. I had no idea who she was. And she said, "You're going to have to go through us now." And everything just got shut down at that point. And I realized that because darker stuff was also being attracted to, you know, psychics and sensitive things like that, these angels, these guards, these guides start coming in and, you know, being more intrusive and become a filter so that the people on this side, you know, the living, the humans, are protected from the darker stuff coming in. And so sometimes it is a bit more difficult to get a read because I have to almost ask permission and go through, you know, guides on the other side to be able to connect now. Mm-hmm. But they just shut me down at one point, and they said, "You're getting too much coming through." And her words were, "You need to go through us now." Those were her exact words. Now, that hasn't always been the case, but that's when they just kind of shut me down at one point.
Was it almost like the guide looking out for you? Is that kind of how you took it? Of, okay, they're doing this on purpose. It's not to hurt me. It's to protect me.
Oh, exactly. It's okay. Definitely much to protect them.
Okay.
To protect us on that side.
No,
I don't know who they are. They might not. They're not loved ones. They're not somebody I knew. They're somebody who that is their task now on the other side, mm-hmm. is to protect us.
I mean, that obviously is not a conversation or an experience that a lot of people have when it comes to the ghosts. You know, a lot of people will to the ghosts. It's kind of a funny way of putting it. But it's one of those things where I always kind of express, you know, when we talk about empathic abilities or psychic abilities, I kind of put people in general on a scale of 1 to 10, like 1 being you walk into a room, you feel something's off, and that's the extent of it. 10 being all the way where you're being able to have a conversation or connect with a spirit guide and hear this voice and be able to literally converse a bit or get a message that, you know, is very clear and there's no question about it. And then, of course, there's, you know, every caveat in between. What was your first experience like that? You know, I don't know if this happened when you were growing up in that house that had all the spirits in it. Was it after that where you first realized, okay, I knew we had ghost experiences in our home growing up, but this whole I'm able to communicate and maybe connect with things on the other side that others can't. Was there a moment of understanding that or clarity there?
Well, I guess I kind of went about things backwards. You know, I started growing up with ghosts and realizing that, you know, spirits and dead people still kind of walk among us.
Yep.
To the other end of the spectrum, you know, some people start off saying, "I'm psychic, I'm hearing voices. What is this?" And then trying to identify what that is and thinking they're crazy. So I went about it the other way. I initially acknowledged that there were spirits on this side, mm-hmm. but not openly communicating with them, just existing along with them.
Sure.
And not until I really started exploring, you know, like historic locations and other places that were deemed, you know, kind of creepy because I just, you know, kind of have an affinity for that, to actually doing what they call, you know, the paranormal investigations, I learned a lot of people actually, other people, go to places to seek out spirits. I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of a novel idea. You know, this was, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, well, they have equipment, they have recorders, and they do all this stuff. And not actually till I started getting EVPs that were, which, you know, electronic voice phenomena,
yeah.
that were actually requesting help or having questions, did that come to me saying, oh, they want to communicate. I have to find a way to be able to communicate back with them. How do I do that? At that point, I actually started, you know, training with some other psychic mediums and doing meditations and doing exercises to learn how to get to that vibrational, you know, level to, you know, quiet the chatter in my own mind to be able to receive the messages and then start communicating with spirits when I went to haunted locations. So I guess I kind of went about it the completely backwards way, mm-hmm. as the way most people do it. You know, a lot of people, when they're young, they start hearing voices, and they don't know who these voices are. And then they figure, oh, I'm hearing the dead.
Sure.
Whereas I, from knowing there's dead people to learning how to communicate with them.
And that's
so
really
kind of got it the other way.
That's very interesting, because sometimes it's looked at as either, you know, a skill, you know, or a gift that either you have or you don't have, that it's not necessarily something that can be learned. Do you feel that this is something that can be learned, or is it just an ability you had that you just really hadn't tapped into yet, to really, you know, see it to its full potential? Could anybody be able to listen and hear the dead the way that you do?
Well, you know, some people disagree with me a little bit but I believe that psychic abilities and being able to communicate with the departed is a skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Just like playing music. Anybody technically can learn how to play a piano. Now, obviously, some people are going to be a lot better at it. Some people are naturally gifted to playing the piano. Some people, you know, have a knack for learning how to, you know, to read the music and to compose intuitively, and they're just going to be better at it from the get-go. The same thing goes with, you know, psychic abilities. Everybody can learn how to do it. They have to just put forth the effort of, you know, basically what you're doing is you're shutting off your own mind, quieting yourself so you can receive what's coming in. And that's the whole part of being, you know, like a medium, is be able to hear what they're trying to say.
Sure.
And that opens up those channels. So it does take practice. It takes, you know, a skill. Some people are better at it than others. You know, I kind of go through phases of my life depending on, you know, distractions of life and work and things that are going on around you that you have to pay attention more to what's going on. And I'll be surprised sometimes in the middle, you know, at work or something, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, there's a ghost. You know, it's like, what is he doing here? You know, I was totally not in the mindset of trying to connect to something, and all of a sudden somebody's there. So sometimes they will just make their presence known when you're not even trying for it. But yes, I believe it's a skill set. Mm-hmm. I believe everybody can learn it. And as I like to focus on a lot in my book, When the Dead Speak, I think a lot of people are not paying enough attention to their own intuition. You know, we are made of 70% water. Water is a conductor. You know, water conducts EMF. It's we've been honed and tuned to pay attention to our surroundings. And like you said, you go into a room and you think level one is going to a room and finding something off. I think that's a good indicator, you know, that something shows you that you have these abilities, that if you can find that energetic difference in an area, that you need to pay a lot of attention to your intuition. Mm-hmm. And then you go from there. Okay, what is off? What's going on here? Why do I feel this way? Does everybody feel that this room is off? If I go step outside the room, do I still have that feeling that something's off? If I step back inside the room, does it feel different? Does it still feel the same? And I'll have people do that a lot during a paranormal investigation. You'll go into this little corner here. I'm not going to tell you if anything happened in that weird little corner, but just step inside there and see if you feel, you know, static electricity, a difference in the energy. You know, do you start feeling nauseous or something? Tell me if you feel anything going on with your body in this one particular area. And I'll have them step out of the area and step back into an area to learn how to use their own intuition. And that's the beginning of, you know, using your psychic abilities. But yes, I believe it definitely is a skill set. The more you practice it, the better you get at it.
I was just going to ask that. Is it something where, well, I mean, it's along those lines anyway. Is it something where, you know, once you practice it, the better you get at it? If you don't practice it, but let's say you've gotten to a certain level and you simply stop using that skill set, is it like other skill sets where you get rusty at it and you need to, you know, do a little, you know, maintenance to stay sharp within it? Or once you're there, is it always there?
I think it depends a lot on the person, but I think there is, you know, a sense of muscle memory mm-hmm. involved. But yeah, once if you've been doing something, you're busy at work or traveling a lot, or, you know, dealing with family issues, or yeah, you can kind of get to a different vibrational level, and you're like, oh, I'm kind of rusty here, and you can feel the difference in your body.
Yeah.
If you've been ill, know, if you've been fighting cancer, have had a cold, had the flu or something, you're definitely not going to be your, you know, your top abilities in any respect. So, yeah, it will come and go, and it doesn't take much to kind of get back into it. I think a few weeks of meditation and watching what you're eating and whatnot will certainly get you back into it. But, yeah, it's, you can drift in and out of it, and it's not the end of the world unless you're, you know, doing it for a business and you have to maintain that vibrational level, you know, to earn a living. But if you're just, you know, curious about the paranormal and or being a paranormal investigator and want to know what's going on, it's certainly acceptable to have to deal with life on this side. Say, I have to be grounded, I have to be paying, you know, focused on what's going on this end as opposed to what's going on in the afterlife right now. And you can go back and forth. But yeah, you can get a little, I think I get a little rusty. Sure. I don't know if everybody does, but yeah, if I'm dealing with, you know, issues that make me be grounded on the side, I'm not paying attention. But like I said, the other day I had something pop in at work, and I'm like, what the heck are you doing here? And it was something that I'd never experienced before either. There's a little, once again, another hallway at work that everybody, you know, people who claim not to have as much psychic ability as a rock, they see things in this hallway. They see shadows darting. They think a person's going through the hallway. They see things all the time in this hallway. And I was probably about 10 feet from this hallway. And I worked basically graveyard shifts, very odd hours. And I had a soda can sitting on a table in this hallway. And I sensed something in this hallway that was not... I don't like to use the term demonic. It was something that was trying to portray itself as something very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of staring at this kind of nebulous energy in the corner, thinking, you're not what you propose yourself to be. What are you? And it was just this kind of cycling little energy. And you start getting messages. You're asking what it is. And it might not be consciously telling you what it is, but you're getting information, you know, from the universe of what this is. And I was getting the impression this had been like a drug addict. And he might have been a badass in real life, and he was trying to portray himself as something, you know, worse than he was. But he became obsessed with trying to get inside my soda can. I know that sounds weird, but I've heard stories of spirits trying to get inside a human body, a human physical body, by food that is ingested, because they might miss being in a human body or they might try to possess that body. And I just was staring at this kind of cycling nebulous energy and looking at my soda can, and I can almost like see him looking at the soda can. Like, I'm going to dive into that soda can and she's going to drink me and I'm going to get inside her body. And I'm just, dude, really? And I just picked up the soda can and I just kind of like moved it closer to me, kind of in the other side of the room, because he wouldn't leave the hallway.
Yeah.
He would not step out of that hallway energy. And so I just moved it out of the hallway and set it down. And a couple hours later, another employee came into work who's also very sensitive. And I just asked, I go, Julie, what do you see in this hallway? And she kind of looks around and she goes, well, there's a dark shadow in the corner. And I go, yeah. She goes, what is he doing there? And I go, what do you think he is? I go, I know what I think he is. You tell me what he thinks he is. She says, I think he does drugs.
Wow.
I go, yeah, I think he's going to be leaving soon. And she goes, oh, okay. So, see, that's always kind of how nonchalant people who are open to it get.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of, oh, there's something there. What do you think it is?
Sure.
And then I get that validation, you know, from what she thinks it is. And I tell her what I thought it was, and then we either deal with it. But I'd never encountered that personally before, of them trying to get inside a food source thinking that I would ingest them. For whatever reason that they had. I don't know if any of your listeners would ever have had that experience, but something was telling me he was for like a half hour, he was obsessed with trying to figure out a way to get in that soda can.
You know, I
finally just had to remove it from the hallway because I just don't have time to deal with this sort of thing. Have you ever had that kind of experience?
No, I mean, that honestly, I'm trying to say is we've, on our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online, we've done, you know, 10,000 plus stories over the course of the years. This is a first, and it's very rare that I can ever say that I've ever heard of a concept that, you know, is I've never heard that one before. You know, every now and then you get those, but after you get through so many, it's like, yep, I, you know, and it's great because I can relate, you know, story to another story to someone who's writing in, so they don't feel alone. They know other people have had this, but honestly, that is one I've never heard before. It's compelling. I think quite often we assume or we think if something is going to possess one or get into someone's body, they'll just do it, that they can just step right in and step right up and boom, you know, they're in there. I've never thought or contemplated or heard a story of the idea of it getting into a food source as a means of a vehicle to get into someone. I'm assuming you'd heard that you said that you've heard other stories of such things happening. Can you expound on any of that? Because to me, that's a whole concept I've never heard and is fascinating.
Well, I know I've seen it in movies, you know, okay, before. I'm trying to remember the exact story of where it's entered through a food. For some reason, it just came to me that exactly is what he was trying to do. And I'm not being able to put my finger on another personal story.
Sure.
Of what happened to somebody else, but I definitely have seen it in movies, and I can't think that they would be so original in their thought to, you know, come up with that. It must be from some sort of, you know, factual story that is come up with. You'll have to give me a few minutes to see if I can come up with, you know, somebody else who's personally had that experience. What comes up in my book a lot is personal boundaries, and I could tell you a lot of stories of people who have not had healthy personal boundaries when dealing with the paranormal, because basically you're dealing with energy and you're dealing with people who might not have been very good on this side, and they don't really change a whole lot when they go on that side. They can be very opportunistic, and I have learned, you know, the hard way from seeing other people's bad experiences that you need to have very healthy personal boundaries energetically, you know, spiritually, personally, in this life and on that life. You set that line in the sand, and I think because he saw I, you know, had that line in the sand, that he was not going to be able to just step in. Now my friend Julie, they'll step right into her, and she allows that because she thinks this is a way of communicating and to helping them, and it often goes well. Sometimes it doesn't, but you know she has enough personal control that she'll let them personally step into her. I will have that conversation next to me. I will not let spirit into me. And so I think he was trying to find a way, you know, to kind of sneak in. One of the ladies that I trained with, she showed me how she sets her personal boundary. And she says, she'll be in a room with about 20 people. And she says, you know, she just kind of fans her hand out at arm's length. It says, here's my boundary. You try to find a way in. And you just like hit this energetic block wall, and you try to find, you know, a vulnerable spot. You're just kind of visualizing this person. And I eventually found a way up through the soles of her feet because she kind of trusted me. She felt my energy, but so she knew I wasn't going to hurt her. But there, you know, through the training, you can set up just this energetic line in the sand. And I think it's very important for people who work in the paranormal to be cognizant of this and work on this, because it can, you know, I've had people die who don't have healthy personal boundaries. And because I think I'm so attuned to that, I get more on the grounded side of it, that spirits are aware of this, and they can't enter me. So I think that's maybe why I had that experience, and that might be so unusual to hear of. But, you know, you've heard of, you know, rather famous people in the paranormal who, you know, ended things badly. There's a lot of domestic violence, you know, in paranormal couples. And you deal with this energy, and you go into these dark spaces, and you encounter these. It might not bother you once or twice or over a couple of years, but it starts layering on you. And I had a friend who was very famous in the paranormal for her EVPs, and she and her husband. And she came to me, she said, oh, things are starting to come home with me. And she was okay with that at first because she said, oh, I'm so open, I got things coming home, I'm able to communicate all the time now at the house, and we've got things going on. And it started not to be so much fun anymore. And it started to kind of affect her life at home, and she couldn't get these things out of the house, and it was affecting her mood. And she called a friend of hers who I'm familiar with. I don't know if you're familiar with him. His name's Adam Bly. He's a demonologist. He works with the Catholic Church. He works with, you know, the criminally insane. And he says, Debbie, I can come in and I can take care of everything in this house. I can remove everything in this house. But unless you change how you work, I'm wasting my time. It's just going to come right back in. And, yeah, she and her husband ending up killing each other in a murder-suicide.
Yeah.
I have to think that a lot of the work that they did and the fact that they didn't have healthy boundaries kind of played a part in it. So, yeah, it's very important that people have these personal healthy boundaries and, you know, really be aware of their intuition when working in the paranormal. And in daily life, you'll see it in the living, too. It really helps carry over.
Sure.
The soda can thing was unique for me, too.
it's just like, wow, that's a new one.
Looking at the can, looking at the thing in the corner, looking at the can, looking at the thing in the corner, I'm like, really, dude? You think I'm that dumb?
That wraps up part one of our interview with Kitty Janish. In part two, we'll discuss when boundaries were not set for one couple, how did their investigations meet a tragic end? Are spirits bound by physical or geographical limitations? Was Kitty able to communicate with her brother after his sudden passing? What are some of the rules for the activity of spirits on the other side? What drew Kitty to research historical locations and capture EVPs as an adult? And what was it like capturing the voice of spirits on board the Queen Mary? And what are some of the most compelling EVPs that Kitty has ever captured? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.